TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Dangers of Climate Change. Global Warming on Greenland. At a conference on climate change at the Hadley Center in Exeter, England, in February of 2005, the world's leading scientists came together to define the dangers of climate change and what levels of carbon dioxide pollution should not be exceeded. The conference opened with presentations on the three new wildcards: recent research about accelerated warming in the Antarctic and on Greenland, and possible changes in the Gulf Stream that may lead, ironically, to cooling of Europe and the U.S. Atlantic coasts while the rest of the world is warming. You already heard an interview with Professor Chris Rapley, the director of the British Antarctic Survey. Today we turn to Greenland. Recent observations of accelerated melting of the Greenland ice sheet is of concern to many scientists. They believe that they are seeing the beginning of a process that might well be irreversible if we don't curb the emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. If the Greenland ice sheet were to melt, it would raise sea levels around the world by 7 meters, over 20 feet, and may well influence the Gulf Stream that brings warmth to the Northern Hemisphere. Observations on the Greenland ice sheet are done by GPS, global positioning systems, radar, and laser via satellites and airplanes. There are a few monitoring stations on the ice, and you will soon hear from Jay Swally, who works directly on location and is also the project scientist of the NASA ICESat satellite. In orbit since January 2003, it is revealing features of the polar ice sheets with details never seen before. Jason Lowe is a scientist in the climate change group of the Hadley Center for Climate Prediction and Research. The focus of his work is sea level change. At the Exeter conference, he presented a compilation of 130 computer models based on data from many of these sources. The computer models are to answer the urgent question: is the melting we are seeing today the precursor of a major deglaciation of Greenland or a momentary anomaly? How fast will this process unfold, and can deglaciation be stopped if it begins accelerating due to internal feedback mechanisms? Also, according to the Hadley Center models, even after carbon dioxide levels are brought under control, the oceans will keep expanding, raising the sea levels around the world. The question is, for how long? Jason Lowe.
The Greenland ice sheet will still melt even if we stop CO2 rising at 450. And if we move along the curve to 650, then in 50% of the model versions, the ice sheet is melting. Now, another question that we're bound to ask is would the meltdown be irreversible even if we reduced CO2 levels? And that's an incredibly difficult question to answer, especially if we want to include the feedbacks between climate and the ice sheet. And it's difficult because of the very long response times involved and the expense of running joint climate ice sheet studies. If we go back to the literature and look at the most recent papers on Greenland meltdown, then I think we find the consensus has not yet been reached. And the two most recent papers I looked at, one of them by Tony Atzo et al.'s work at the Hadley Center, suggested that the meltdown would be irreversible. Another paper by colleagues at the University of Bristol suggests there may be a recovery if we reduce CO2 levels. So we need to do more work on that. And something that's coming out of a study we're doing here is that the result it's likely to depend on the state of the ice sheet when we reduced CO2. We're currently looking at that. Just very briefly, the second question I'm interested in is how long does it take to stabilise sea level? If we perform an experiment with a GCM where CO2 is increased over a fairly rapid period, in this case 70 years, and then stabilised at 4 times pre-industrial levels, then we see the rate of temperature increase rapidly declines. It's still increasing slightly, but it slows dramatically after the stabilisation point. If we look at the thermal expansion component of sea level rise, the rate of thermal expansion is still very large at the end of 1,000 years. There's an efolding time in this simulation for sea level of the order of 1,400 years. Now, that's just thermal expansion. We've also looked at a dynamic simulation of the ice sheet. And in this, we've linked the ice sheet to the climate model in a two-way coupling so that the climate can affect the ice sheet and changes in the ice sheet can feed back on the climate. And this set of figures shows the decline of the ice sheet as it gradually withdraws from the west and from the north and south over a period of 3,000 years. And what you'll see by year 1,000, we've lost upwards of 50% of the ice sheet in this simulation. By year 3,000, we have a small remnant of an ice sheet left on the very high ground to the east of Greenland.
Jason Lowe prefaced his conclusions with a word of caution. There are many uncertainties, he said, and much research still needs to be done. But as matters stand today, this is what his team of scientists concludes. Jason Lowe.
So briefly onto the conclusions then. Deglaciation of Greenland may be triggered for even quite modest stabilisation targets. It may be irreversible, but we can't say that definitively yet. And sea level is likely to continue to rise for more than 1,000 years after greenhouse gas concentrations have been stabilised. And that's even if we don't exceed the threshold for melting Greenland. If we do, that will make it more severe.
That was Jason Lowe from the Hadley Center. He gave one of the most noted papers at the February 2005 conference on the dangers of climate change. To get a better sense of the kind of data that enters the computer models, such as the one at the Hadley Center, I spoke to Jay Swally, NASA scientist with a specialty in glaciers and also the project scientist for ICESat. I found his name in the recent excellent 3-part series on climate change by Elizabeth Colbert in The New Yorker. She had met him by chance when she visited Swiss Camp, a research station on the Greenland Ice Shield. I spoke to Jay Swally by phone in early June 2005. When I reached him, he had just booked a flight to Mount Kilimanjaro to study the disappearing glacier there. The ice cover on Mount Kilimanjaro has decreased by 81% between 1912 and 2000. I started by asking Jay Swally how he made his measurements at Swiss Camp and what he discovered.
Well, the measurements that we made at the Swiss Camp were made by putting a GPS receiver in the ice. We implant a pole in the ice, and then we use GPS to very accurately measure the position of the pole every day during the summertime. And then what we discovered is that when the melt increases on the surface, that the ice speeds up. And in the last few years, we're finding that the ice velocity almost doubles in the summertime during the month of July when the melting is most intense. And we also find that for brief periods, the ice actually lifts up a little bit, lifts up about 6 inches for brief periods of time. And we believe that that is due to the increase in meltwater at the bottom of the ice.
In addition to the GPS data, you also have ICESat data for a little over 2 years. Can you explain how those are being gathered?
The ICESat satellite has a laser on, and the laser very accurately measures the position of the satellite, the distance from the satellite to the surface. That measurement is actually done to 32 centimeters. And then we know, also using a GPS and the satellite, we know the position of the satellite to a couple of inches. The laser very accurately measures the height of the surface of the ice sheet. And as the satellite passes along, it makes a measurement every 170 meters. And then with repeated measurements, we can tell whether the ice is getting thicker or thinner.
You also used data from RadarSat. Can you explain those?
We're using radar altimetry data, which is different from RadarSat. RadarSat provides an image, but the data from the European satellites, the ERS-1 and the ERS-2 satellites, which have radar altimeters on, measure the distance from the satellite to the surface. They do not do it as accurately as lasers do, and that's why we're using a laser and ISAT. But we have measurements for the last 10 years now from radar altimetry satellites, so this gives us a long-term record of the change, even though it's not as accurate as we would like it to be. We're discovering what was discovered by aircraft also. We're confirming that the edges of the ice sheet are getting thinner, but because we have more measurements over a longer period of time, we're getting more accurate measurements of the growth in the center of the ice sheet.
Scientists and the IPCC all point to acceleration of events in the last 30 years. Do you see that as well?
Well, what is seen in Greenland is an increase in the melting, particularly over the last 9 or 10 years, there's been an increase in melting at the edges of the ice sheet. And at the same time, we've found that the movement of the ice accelerates in the summertime. So yes, we are seeing an increase in the melting at the edges of the ice sheet, and we believe that this corresponds to an increase in temperatures.
Do you also make a correlation to CO2 when you talk about increase in temperature?
Well, what we see are the changes in the ice, and we see the changes in the temperature. The computer models have long predicted that this change would occur with the CO2 and other greenhouse gases that are building up in the atmosphere. Those models have also predicted that the changes would be largest in the Arctic regions, and we believe that the changes that we're seeing over the last 10 years in the Arctic are in fact due to the predicted greenhouse warming.
There's a reference to an ice river in the New Yorker story. Can you tell me about Jakobshavn Isbræ?
It's the fastest flowing glacier in Greenland. It's an outlet glacier. It comes down through a fjord that's about 33 miles long. As the glacier comes down, part of it is floating on the water. And the part that's floating has retreated dramatically in the last 5 to 6 years. The floating part is actually retreating far enough so that it may be disappearing soon. And as the floating part disappears, this changes the pressure on the ice that's coming from the grounded part. And so there may actually be an acceleration of the flow from the grounded ice sheet.
Do you have a comment on James Hansen's statement that the disintegration of the Greenland ice sheet could be set in motion in a matter of decades?
Well, that is probably the fastest scenario for disappearance. The key idea, though, is that during the next century, we're going to see changes. The ice sheet will continue to get thin at these edges, and the ice flow will accelerate, and the center parts will probably get thicker. But as time goes on, there very well may be a threshold that we go beyond if the climate warming continues, as some people predict it will. Some point will be reached where the ice sheet will continue to disintegrate and then not reform.
And then other scientists see a correlation between Greenland ice melting and the functioning of the Gulf Stream. Do you have any comments on that?
There's a lot of theories about what caused the abrupt climate change, and one of them is that if there's an increase in meltwater coming from Greenland, that this can disrupt the or change the thermohaline circulation of the ocean, and that could change, lead to changes very quickly in the way the Gulf Stream flows.
How do you see that playing itself out? I've heard like different explanation what exactly happens in this balance of salt and warmth and ocean currents.
The way the ocean flows is driven not only by winds, but also by the salt and heat that's exchanged with the ocean. And the idea is that this flow can go in different modes, and it can switch from one to the other. Rather than having a gradual change, it can switch and flow in a different direction. And so the idea is that if some threshold is reached, then a switch will occur and the Gulf Stream may start flowing in a different direction and carry less heat to the northern latitudes.
I have so far focused on the Antarctic and Greenland, but an earlier interview with Stephen Schneider showed that glaciers all across the world are melting, so they are part of the picture too.
Exactly. The small glaciers around the world, there's no question that they're changing their size very quickly. Some of them are disappearing. There's marked changes that are very visible in the glaciers in most of the Alps of Europe. And throughout the world, in Patagonia and Alaska, these glaciers are decreasing in size, and it's almost certain that this is associated with the warmer temperatures that they're exposed to.
Do you want to say something about your upcoming travel?
My upcoming travel? Oh,
right.
You mean to Kilimanjaro?
Right.
I'm going along to make some measurements. We point the ISAT satellite over to Kilimanjaro to try to get tracks across the small ice caps there, and we're making some of those measurements now to see whether we can get better measurements of the height of these glaciers, of these small ice caps that are still remaining there. It's mainly a project at the University of Innsbruck, and I'm going along to make some GPS measurements with my other colleague, Connie Steffen from the University of Colorado. So we're going to be making some GPS measurements and doing some studies there. The main project is by Dr. Jorg Kaser at the University of Innsbruck, and they have weather stations up there to make measurements of the changes in temperature and the changes in solar heating and so forth, trying to understand why these caps are decreasing in size.
Now, at the end of your interview with the New Yorker reporter, you gave some dire prognosis about what might happen at Swiss Camp 10 years from now.
As the melting has increased up in the vicinity of the Swiss Camp, we find that we're going up a little bit earlier every year because it's very difficult to travel around after the snow starts to melt. So we were speculating that in 10 years we would have to be going up a few weeks, maybe a month earlier, in order to avoid the heavy melt season. The Nova crew kept asking me, are you alarmed by this, or are you alarmed by this, or what's alarming? And then I ended up being quoted on BBC by saying, what's alarming is the change in temperatures and the effect of the thinning of this on the ice. And I think it is alarming. We are seeing marked changes in the temperature, and we're seeing marked changes in the ice. But we're also seeing some increases in precipitation. This year at the Swiss Camp is one of the largest years of winter snowfall that we've seen since we've been going up there for about 15 years.
How do you explain that?
Well, it is very likely associated with the warmer winter temperatures. Winter temperatures have been warmer, and it's an increase in storminess. The warmer winter temperatures, even though it's warmer, it usually is still below freezing, and so the warmer winter temperatures can bring in increased precipitation. And then this additional snowfall needs to melt before the snow is removed and before the ice melts.
You know, what I found alarming as a layperson was to just contemplate, and I had never done that before, contemplate the Antarctic and Greenland side by side and think about how enormous the water masses are that are bound up in there, and what if they were to, you know, melt even to a degree. And then I was quite fascinated by the other part, that I didn't know how the ocean currents are influenced, maybe more by the Antarctic than by Greenland, but still that these two cooling poles really drive the ocean currents, which are so important.
And that's exactly right. And they drive the ocean currents in various timescales. And in the Antarctic, the water, what's called bottom water, is cooled and becomes more dense. And then that sinks and goes throughout the world oceans. Well, if you have changes in the amount of this or the temperature of it, these are changes that can be taking place over quite a long period of time. So it's very difficult a lot of times to get total quantitative estimates of what's happening. We're still discovering new things about the ocean and the atmosphere and the ice.
I had never looked at the scientific instruments that are available now, especially since satellites. And it's kind of very moving for a layperson to see how much we can know now and how little use we make of our new wisdom.
We utilize the new technology of GPS to put a receiver out and then turn it on every few days to get a measurement. And that new technology allowed us to discover that the ice was speeding up. If it hadn't been for that, we would not have learned that. Or if we hadn't thought about going out there to do it, one of my colleagues said that was a silly thing to do. We're just going to find the same thing every year.
But that turned out not to be true.
It turned out to be true the first year, because the first year we put it in 1996 happened to have a low, below average melt, and there wasn't any acceleration. And then we made measurements for a few years, and we found that the melt was increasing. And sure enough, the ice was accelerating. What this showed is that the meltwater that forms on the surface when the ice melts, sometimes it accumulates in lakes for a period of time, but eventually it finds its way during the summer to the into the ice, and it runs down into cracks in the ice and tunnels in the ice called moulons. And what our measurements showed is that when the ice accelerates, the reason for this is that the water must be going all the way to the base and lubricating the base between the ice and the bedrock and allowing the ice to slide faster.
I'm really glad you brought this up. That's what Chris Rapley from the British Antarctic Survey showed in his presentation at the Hadley Center. He showed a map of the flow patterns of ice streams and said that they had been so surprised by the fact that they flow faster and go deeper inside the glaciers than previously assumed.
Previous estimates of climate change and the effect of climate change in the ice sheets looked at the increase in melting and how much ice that would take away from the surface, and they also look at the changes in precipitation over the ice sheet. But these are, they're very fast processes, but they do not affect the ice itself. And the discovery that we made with the GPS receivers, where we discovered that the ice is accelerating, that the water is getting to the bottom, this provides a mechanism for climate change that's taking place in the atmosphere and the surface to actually get into the ice and affect the flow of ice. One of the current mysteries is why sea level is rising as much as it is, because as we look at the ice sheets and look at the small glaciers, we did not come up with enough water to explain the current sea level rise. We know that part of the current sea level rise is due to thermal expansion of the ocean as the ocean water gets warmer due to the increase in temperatures of the Earth. The ocean waters expand, and just how far this heat is carried into the ocean determines how much the expansion is actually occurring, and also predictions for the future. There's a fair amount of uncertainty as to how much this expansion will be. But But this is a fairly slow process that goes on with time as the Earth, its climate changes.
You know, every time I talk to scientists, I say, you do know what is happening, and you need to tell us.
Well, one of the questions that I was asked by Greenpeace was the public perception of climate change, and my response to that was that I found that 6 or 7 years ago that many of the people that I would meet socially or on airplanes, and I talked to them about what I'm doing, because of the publicity and news networks and so forth, they believed that climate change was something that was happening and we needed to be concerned about it. But it's been surprising to me in the last few years the number of people that are far more skeptical about it, or they say believe that it's just a natural fluctuation. And how do we know that this is man-made or man-induced versus a natural fluctuation? So there's been a real change, and I think that a lot of this may be due to the negative pseudo-science that has come out from industry lobbyists.
That was a conversation with Jay Swally, NASA scientist with a specialty in glaciers and also the project scientist for ICESat. The next TUC radio program will be on possible changes in the Gulf Stream. You can find out more about this series on the dangers of climate change on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour program on Greenland and the upcoming program on the Gulf Stream by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive and helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. Time of Useful Consciousness is an aeronautical term. The time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for the pilot to save the plane. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.